Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations stance point.
Still Here is a project led by the Institute for Collaborative Race Research in partnership with the Ngarla Whangarra and AAA. Still Here focuses on how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community organisations do much more than deliver services. They are sites of resistance to colonialism, ongoing struggle and emancipation.
Today we want to hear the story of your organisation, BO, and how it serves community and expresses sovereignty, whatever that means to you. I'm Kevin Yao Yee, a Waka Waka and South Sea Islander man on Yuggera country today, and pay my respect to the elders past and present. And I'm lucky to be joined by our brother Bo Spearham from Warriors of the Aboriginal Resistance. Bo, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on the show.
No worries. I wonder if you can introduce yourself and your mob.
Definitely. So Yama, Bo Spearham, Gumori Kuma Marawari, born in Western Sydney, grew up on the south side of Brisbane. My old man is from a mission in Moree, and my mum's from a reserve in Garuga. And, yeah, went to the Murray School as a young fella.
Solid.
Went to St. Mary's State High School. Graduated, did a whole bunch of stuff.
Yep.
Until 2012, and then I found activism and radio. And
the rest is history.
My path. Yeah, literally the rest is history.
Deadly. Brother, thank you. And really keen for these conversations. And I know over the last few months meeting for the Still Here project, we've been able to have some really good conversations around sovereignty and around Aboriginal community-controlled organisations. Bo, I'm wondering if you can tell us about your organisation and its connections with place and community.
Definitely. So Warriors of the Aboriginal Resistance, I guess you could say, was established in 2014 at the G20 protest here in Brisbane, in Musgrave Park, actually. Funny enough, it was actually a few months after SEED, I was started the First Nations Climate Action Group.
Yeah, okay.
So the both of us started together. Quick funny story, like we were both at, they came and joined us at the G20 protest. So
yeah.
For 2 or 3 days, we were just there standing back off, sussing each other out.
Yeah.
And then next minute, we're cruising around doing pig patrol with each other through Musgrave Park. And, then 10 years later, one of the sister girls who were part of that group is now the CEO of one of the largest political groups in Australia, Larissa Baldwin.
Yeah, sister's killing it. Hey, she's just been going from strength to strength. I got goosebumps. She's obviously someone who's no stranger to the front lines, and to see her in that position is really remarkable, isn't it?
Definitely, and testament to sort of what we're about to talk about, community controlled, about grassroots activism, and about sort of working with our mob, not against, in a position like where we're working for the mob because we know what's best for the mob.
Of course.
Naturally, we're working with the mob because, they underpin, the struggle, the voice, and what it is that we need as organisations and as groups as well. So war started then in 2014.
Yep.
And it started, I like to say there was a whole bunch of pillars that sort of underpinned war, and that was the fact that from 2012 to 2014, there was many events for myself that happened.
Yeah.
I established the embassy in Musgrave Park
yes.
in 2012. And then May 16th, 2012, we had about 250 to 300 police officers surround the whole of Musgrave Park.
Yeah.
So like Cordelia Street, Edmonton Street and Russell Street. And then we had, sergeants standing up there like, watching their soldiers go to battle while they come in and rush in and pick us off.
Yep.
That was a really, really huge moment for me because, one, it was the first time I got arrested.
Yep.
But two, also, there was amazing collaborations between the union movement, the student movement, and the sort of broader activist movement as well that got behind and supported us and got arrested with us. And then sort of through the next couple of years, one of the amazing things that BASE, Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy, done was establish you know, really key, vital points where we could engage with the community. So I think one of the first things that we started was the magazine. It was called Brisbane Blacks Monthly.
Yeah.
First, it started off as a publication to sort of let the broader community know what we were doing.
Sure.
And then and then interest came from other mob from around the state, from different states and territories, to say, oh, brothers, you know, we know you got this paper. Can we put our yarn and what we're doing in our community there as well? So we started doing that there as well. Then we changed it from Brisbane Blacks Monthly to just Brisbane Blacks.
Yep.
And we sort of like revamped it, relaunched it, where we were printing, you know, 12 to 1400 copies.
Yeah, wow.
I think it was like a month.
Yep.
That we were doing with the magazine, and still through doing that there, we had some deadly grandmothers who was always active and always at the fire and sort of always meeting with us. And one of them was Annie Karen Cousy or Annie Karen Matheson. And throughout the early days of her coming to the embassy, she was engaged in a battle of fighting against docs to get her kids placed back or granny's placed back in her care. So what happened was, long story short, she beats them, gets the babies back. But then, you know, mob start coming to the fire or start calling her up and saying, you know, Auntie Karen or Sister Karen, can you help us? How are you, you know, how did you defeat these fellas, you know? They've already got a couple of my kids in care, you know, and I don't want to take these last ones off me. So she met up with them, yarned to them all, had a big, you know, meeting with us. And, you know, one of the main things that sort of come up for us in that instance was automatically as soon as these workers go into their homes, I think, you know, because there's no food in the cupboards or the fridge, they automatically could neglect. When we all know, you know, the price of living here in Australia, in particular in South East Queensland, is crazy. For a lot of our mob who aren't sort of working and are on sort of Centrelink, we all know, you know, Centrelink is a, you know, doesn't, you know, pay enough as well. So
so
she came to the fire and we all sort of emptied our pockets. And then the next week we said, instead of emptying our pockets, we'll start a food bank and then, you know, chuck into that. And, so we started doing that. And
so
I'm
hearing, Bo, since war has come to be, there's been a bunch of different projects and work that has sort of come from it, right?
This is before war. So these are the pillars that sort of, I guess,
developed,
you know, helped us
develop,
you know, our community, helped develop how we sort of work with our community, and help us sort of recognize, you know, the struggles that are happening in our communities, but then also help, you know, where can we best engage with community and on what topics as well. So, you know, like we, you know, so the food program got that big to the point where we're doing like, I think like 500 passes a fortnight.
Yeah, wow.
Out of Muskrat Park Hall there. You know, we had volunteers, you know, using their own cars.
Yep, yep.
Coming down, we had like a whole bunch of fridges in the hall there as well. Mm. And then obviously throughout that period, Auntie Karen and the Grandmothers Against Removal were sort of established and doing amazing things in Queensland and New South Wales and in the NT as well. So, you know, like before war was even existing, you know, myself, Ruby, Brother Callum, Phil, you know, like a core group of us were just sort of amazed by the activism that we were sort of swept into and that surrounded us as well. You know, like, and, you know, before Annie Karen was as involved, a sweet, quiet old lady, you know, a grandmother looking for a way to get her kids back. Now she's, you know, knows how to sort of go into court and talk to these lawyers. And if shit goes down, she knows how to sort of, you know, set up a rally.
Yeah.
You know, she knows how to organize that and she knows how to shut, you know, places down.
Yeah.
And then, like, this is what we learned, you know, from these old followers as well. So, you know, come 2014, you know, myself, Callum, Mariki and Pakiri, you know, we decided to go to Canada for a month and to check out the activism of other Indigenous mob over there. So we drove the whole country from West Coast to East Coast, from Vancouver all the way to Nova Scotia.
Yep.
And just stopping off in different Indigenous blockade camps and protest camps and like embassy tent cities they had in like the cities and stuff as well. So we were just amazed by the resilience that they had, by the strength, you know, that they had, and also the givingness, you know, sort of for me, it reminded me of our mob here.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, like we made lifelong friends there as well, where to the point where we've invited mob on several occasions from there over here.
Yeah.
So even before then, like we had this idea of this group that we wanted to have, and originally we were going to call WAR Woomera Aboriginal Resistance. Like the Woomera is what you set the spear on, and it's a weapon that was used by many, if not all, nations here on so-called Australia.
Yeah.
So like, oh, you know, what's one thing that sort of encompasses who we are?
Yeah, yeah.
And when one thing about the Woomera is defeated the bow and arrow.
Yeah, okay. So you were actually considering having that as a name initially?
As a name. So it would have been Woomera Aboriginal Resistance.
Yeah.
And then because over there, like, they call themselves warrior societies, and, you know, like, we'll just inspire, like, nah, we'll just change the war, our warriors, eh?
Yeah.
So we just ended up changing it to that.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we came back here, established WAR, and then hit the ground running.
You haven't stopped, brother. You use it everywhere at the moment. And I know, as a black fellow living here in Minjin Mianjin here, I know whenever anything needs to be done and there's protests that need to be held, WAR's usually not too far away.
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, like one thing that we didn't want to do was, you know, fall into the trap of being like the next protest group. But it was so vital for our community to have an organization, you know, that was active essentially 24/7.
Absolutely.
As well. So that was something that we fell into. You know, one of the main things that we wanted to be, to do as WAR is, you know, our mantra is resist, divide, be colonized. So we wanted to resist, you know, colonial occupation on our homelands, you know, resist, you know, over policing and like, what do you call it? Coppers sort of, you know, being racist and that as well.
Mass incarceration of black fellas.
Yeah, we wanted to sort of do all these different things.
Yeah.
You know? And then also we wanted to revive our language and our cultures.
Yeah.
We wanted to be a part of, you know, something more than just sort of what we can sort of do when we're on the front lines protesting as well.
Mm.
And then we wanted to sort of start, you know, going back to country, you know, and learning our relationship to our neighbouring nations, or just a mob in our own community. So, you know, resist, provide, be colonized was just a mantra that we sort of understood and that we wanted to do. And if you look at sort of some of the members of WAR now that are on country, they're doing like those exact things, you know, reviving language by writing books, doing history, you know, projects, you know, stopping sort of certain different construction, whether it's mining companies or tourism or other things on country as well. So, you know, we didn't sort of sway too far away from what it is that we wanted to do in our communities where we live or on the countries from where we belong as well. So,
it's definitely
something that, you know, we sort of, you know, wanted to do and pride ourselves in doing as well.
Yeah, no, deadly. And I'm just wondering, you know, you've touched on all the different things that brought WAR to its conception, and we touched on some of the stuff that WAR has done since. I'm wondering, brother, what are some of the challenges WAR has faced over the years, and how have you mob responded?
That's a good question. You know, one of the biggest, our greatest challenges is understanding what it is that our community needs and wants, and how our community engages with what we want to do as well. You know, so like, if we wanted to organise a certain rally about a certain topic, like, if our community didn't necessarily understand what that issue was, then they're not going to sort of turn up and be a part of it.
Sure, yeah.
And if we didn't create a space where our mob knew that they could, you know, get up and talk on the mic and feel welcome and feel safe, then they're not going to come. So one of the things that we needed to do was establish our relationships with community, you know, make sure that when we hold our events, that community know that they feel safe there, that they can, you know, jump up on the mic and talk.
Sure.
But then also, when we organise our protest camps, when they come, they're going to get fed breakfast, lunch and dinner, you know, and they can have a say on what it is that we want to do as well. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we face in our communities is thinking that is annulling the separation between community and what it is that we think we want.
Yep.
And how we deliver that as well. You know, so whether we're stuck in academia or we're stuck in, you know, working the 9-to-5 grind, or whether we're stuck in sort of being an artist or a musician, how do we best create something that, you know, not that we're the leaders of, but what our people can carry with them as well. Like, you know, like when we were sort of, you know, coming up and starting more, one of our biggest sort of inspirations, you know, was people like Malcolm X and, a lot of overseas fellows, and in particular Malcolm X. And one of the things I really loved about him is, you know, before he was, you know, the sort of deadly man that he was, he was a hustler, he was a pimp, he was a criminal, he was a junkie, he was all these things. But one of the main things that he didn't lose when he became who he was how to communicate with the mob, you know, on the ground, you know. So one thing that I always do, I always see mobs in Boundary Street, in Musgrave Park, wherever I am, always go to them, have a yarn to them, say hello, you know, go say hello to the aunts and uncles and stuff as well. So, you know, getting to know sort of the people on the ground who in reality are more at risk than what we are, because we're just sort of the advocates of sort of the issues that we face when in actuality, you know what I mean, our mob who are more susceptible to sort of these violence in our communities.
Yep.
And more vulnerable. So it's just being engaged more is the challenge, I think. You know, and being connected to where we come from. You know, I'm very thankful that on both sides of my mum and dad's side, we're connected and we're welcomed in our communities as well. But then also understanding the issues that are happening. You know what I mean? And also, you know, understanding that everybody has a place within our movement, you know?
Yeah.
And for some people, that's hard to sort of fathom. And I'll be honest, I was one of the first, you know, like I did. I had my sort of, you know, preconceptions and misconceptions, about, you know, other people within that community, especially, you know, queer or trans mob. You know, I was very homophobic and very queer.
Yep.
Queerphobic.
Yep.
You know, growing up because of, you know, my environment and the things I heard and the things, you know, that were in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think one of the best things that happened, you know, in my sort of circle was that, you know, the majority of people that are in war, that are surrounded, you know, identify as queer, trans, and non-binary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I've got to sort of witness a whole shift within sort of war as well. But then also got to sort of witness war sort of become a group that wasn't just stagnant.
Yeah.
In sort of, you know, our identity.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it transformed into something where it was, you know, well, what does my community look like?
Yep.
You know, it's black, it's queer, it's big, it's dark, it's fair-skinned.
Yes.
It's all that as well. You know, like, it was amazing to see sort of war become that as well. And, you know, I think that, like, those were the biggest challenges for me, because once I understood that, I got to understand sort of the complexities with issues, and understand the importance of, like, intersectionality.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know what I mean, with women's rights, queer trans rights, or black folks' rights in general, and how that all sort of comes together, but then how that all sits on a ladder, you know, and understanding, oh, wait, you know, this is why the sisters at the moment are the highest incarcerated.
Yeah.
They're always getting attacked. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's really interesting. And thank you for sharing, you know, your own sort of growth in this space as well. Because I think it's impossible to work for an Aboriginal community controlled organisation or with WAR, any of the other orgs that are still a part of the Still Here project. And I think not grow with it yourself personally. So thank you for sharing that, brother.
All good.
I'm wondering, you touched on this a little bit earlier, talking about Auntie and also your trip over to Canada. I'm wondering if you can flesh out, where do you see the influence of your org's origins in your work?
Oh, I think it's reflected in everything that is, you know, on a personal level, it's reflected in everything that has, you know, happened in my life.
Sure. Sort of
what's happened in the lives of blackfellas, you know. We're a result of the massacres as well as sort of the warriors that sort of defended our country, you know. And that I was saying, you know, like we sort of walk in the footsteps of giants and all these things. Like that's definitely what it is. And I think that's where that sort of comes from, is understanding, you know, what has happened. So like in 2012, my brother, he come back from the 10 embassy in Canberra, and he goes, "Oh, bros, we're starting the embassy up in Musgrave Park, come down.
Yeah.
So I was like, "Okay, right, yeah, then all good." So I came down, it was me, him, and Annie Karen Cogill. The three of us, we came there literally for about a week, the first week, pissing down rain and all.
Yeah.
One of the mad things is like, I think it was like the first or the second night, which made me stay.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of locked it in for me was, Aunt was sort of yarning about her days growing up here in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Yarning about sort of, you know, having run-ins with the coppers, you know, having arguments, you know, with racists and, you know, talking about black deaths in custody back in the 80s or, you know, all these different things and thinking like, fuck, you're dead. Like, I'm so, being like, oh shit, you know, I mean, this is the same thing that is happening to me, you know, and my generation of young people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I've heard it before, but I think for me, within that setting, out of 10 embassy, you know what I mean? It just sort of clicked for me, and I ended up staying for a whole week. You know, lucky enough, I was doing one of those gaming sandwich sort of programs where
you could have a couple of days off, you reckon?
I had a couple of weeks off.
Yeah.
I don't think I ended up getting cut off, and then I had to, you know, chase around, find some work or some training out there, which I ended up doing as well, so, which was good.
I'm wondering in relation to war, how do you see war being different from large peak and mainstream organisations, and what does that mean for the community in which you serve?
Definitely. I think, you know, sadly we've got into a position where our organisations, their activeness in community is based upon, you know, some of the funding that they get as well.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, we don't hold that against sort of the individuals that work for, you know, these companies and these organizations. So we're free to sort of go out there and say what we want.
Yeah.
And you know, when we have these platforms, you know, we get to engage with mob more, you know. I think that's maybe the difference is we could just sort of turn up when we wanted as well. And not to say that other blackfellas in their uniforms couldn't as well. Of course, they totally did.
Yeah.
You know, of course they do as well.
Yeah.
I think that's what sort of differs with war in that sort of capacity with different organizations is because we're a community sort of self-funded sort of organization. You know, that didn't have sort of, you know, strings attached or elements attached where we could be censored or things like that. You know, like we were, you know, engaged, you know, with the community. Our philosophies were sort of based upon, you know, like what, you know, the philosophies of previous, you know, community activism groups were sort of based upon as well.
Yeah.
You know, but then also realizing that, you know, like the messaging, or you know, realizing like that, you know, when our organization started, they started, you know, as a community controlled organization. It wasn't about sort of what we can do with the money; it's about what we can do with nothing.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
you know, and like I was actually just yarning to Carver about that just before.
Yeah,
as well, like we forget like where we came from, you know, and sometimes we forget that we can, you know, like we think that we're bound by sort of, you know, or we're restricted.
Yeah.
But we're not. I mean, like, if we just remember how the Hmong fellows in the 70s sort of, you know, did it when I did all the medical centers and the health services, the legal services, like, you know. There's old Kirko is always, he's got a saying, like, there's a job that needs to be done and somebody's got to do it regardless.
Yeah.
And so that's how, you know, that's sort of how we sort of take it on
as
well.
And I'm wondering, you touched on this, for those who don't know and hopefully are learning more about war, how important is it, Bo, that war has the freedom to say whatever they like. Because I think you touched on a really good point that some mob are working for companies and have strings attached to workplaces that prevent people from speaking out. How important is that freedom?
Oh, definitely. It's so important. You know what I mean? And, you know, we started out as a young, you know, I'm getting old. I might age out of worry in the next couple of years. So,
hey, watch them.
So, like, look, what we wanted to do in the beginning was start a political organization that gave agency to young black fellas, first and foremost, that said, you have a space here. And we want to learn our history. Ooh. We want to learn our political struggle and all these other different things as well. And, you know, you can be a part of that journey as well. So, and like young fellas, hard-headed, you know what I mean? Run the ball straight up.
Yeah, that's, no matter what. No fear, eh?
No fear, get growled at, and all. But, I think for the most part, it was a part of the learning curve, you know what I mean? Like, we did, like at G20, we've learned effigies of black fellows.
Yeah.
You know, and through that whole conversation, and I'll tell you now, we sparked a huge community conversation.
Yep.
A couple of us had meetings with mob in the community behind closed doors, which I'll never forget as well.
Yep.
But within that instance, we've been in effigies of Warren Mundine, Noel Pearson, and Marcel Langton.
Yep.
Do I regret doing it? Yeah, I do. But do I take, if I have the chance to do it again, would I do it? I think I would because of the learning curve that I learned from it. What I learned from it is the importance of how important it is for our mob to have our own discussion in our own space.
Hey,
regardless of how we have that discussion, if we want to shout, scream, laugh, cry, our spaces are important.
Yes.
Where social media and white media can't control the narrative of that as well.
Yep.
I always look back on that instance when we did that and look at sort of all the deadly conversation that I had with other mob that agreed and didn't agree with that and look at sort of how we can sort of go about having these, discussions like that as well.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right. We're not all one homogenous group and we're going to have different views and different opinions. And it's how do we create spaces where we can do that, right?
We don't have to like each other.
Yeah, that's him.
We have to understand that there's a massive job that needs to be done, like. And
someone's got to do it, like Uncle Coco says, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brother, I'm wondering, what do you imagine for the future of war in this community?
I imagine, beyond war. You know what I mean? Like, war exists because of what happens in that community.
Mm.
War wouldn't exist if we didn't have the shit going on in that community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The over-representation, the brutalization, the stealing of our kids. We wouldn't have... war wouldn't exist if it was that. So, you know what I mean? I'm never one to sort of push on people, join the war, start a chapter in your communities. I'm one to say, start something up in your communities. You know what I mean? Start another group up, start doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Just start doing something that
needs
to be, that you can do. And, you know what I mean? Like, normalize what you're good at.
Because
once we normalize that, then we can add that to the resistance and then we can move forward.
Hey. Bo, I'm wondering, for our final question, if you were talking to future generations about your work and the work that war does, how would you describe sovereignty and accountability to community?
Sovereignty to me is, my connection to country and the right for me to be involved in the discussions that happen on country and also and how things affect our people as well, that's what sovereignty is to me, what was the second part again?
How does describe accountability to your community?
Definitely, accountability is essential to sort of how we move forward as well, and then there's so many so many, it's essential to what we know, what we got to do. We see this trend in, hurt people, people who are hurt will hurt other people.
Yeah, yep.
As much as we try to do good without sort of being accountable to sort of some of the things that we have done, we can actually do more damage. And accountability is everything, It's saying, thank you for pulling me up and letting me out there as well.
Yep.
And then it's about sort of, applying like what Aunt and Uncle said to the stuff that we do.
That's it. That part there, brother. Yeah.
Because we're facilitators. That's what we are. And our job is to get our mob from point A to point B.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But on that journey, it's to give our mob the right message.
Deadly.
You know what I mean? And then we're accountable to that message that we give our mob.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why we've got to be on, our T's got to be crossed and our I's got to be dotted. And you know what I mean? If we give that false message to our mob, then that's enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we got to accept that fact. Because that community who are the ones that we want to represent. Our communities are the ones that are being brutalized.
Yeah.
And it's our communities are the ones that move, that are the movement behind, what it is that we're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're the feet that are pushing forward for progress.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we're just facilitators. We give them a space to be happy, sad, angry, crying, laughing, whatever it is, whatever I want, that's what we got to do. That's that in between A and B spot, our part, and we have to accept what they want to do with that.
Absolutely. This morning we're talking everything community controlled and sovereignty, and we've just had Bo Spearham talk about war. Brother Bo, thank you for joining us today and for the yarns around the important work that war does and how you remain accountable to community and how sovereignty is expressed through the work that you do. Thank you, Bo.
All good. Thank you for that.
See you, brother.
Thanks for that. Bye-bye.